Okay. Call the meeting of Senate Labor and Commerce to order at 5:01. We're right on time. For April 13th, 2011, we have two bills scheduled for today, and I want to thank members of Labor and Commerce for agreeing to attend one more meeting. We've been meeting a lot lately, and just for everybody's information, our final meeting will be tomorrow at 2 p.m., and that's it for this session. We have two bills scheduled today. House Bill 155, Public Instruction Contracts, also House Bill 87, Antitrust Violation Penalties, and Senator Pascavan is still in Senate Resources, and as soon as Senate Resources adjourns, he will be attending this meeting. And again, we have the House Labor and Commerce Chair, Representative Olson, and his staffer, Conrad Jackson. Mr. Jackson, would you like to come forward, please, and answer any questions we may have?
Which bill are you taking up, Mr. Chairman?
House Bill 155, if you can present, and then we will take public testimony. Sorry.
Stepping in.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. Forgetting Senator Giesel, Senator Davis, Senator Menard, myself, Chair Senator Egan, and Senator Pascavan will be joining us shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jennifer Sinnott, staff to Representative Olson. I'd first like to apologize that he's not here. He would like to send his apologies. He's has another commitment at the moment, but he may be walking through the door.
And Jennifer, I apologize if I can interrupt you. We've been joined by Senator Pascavan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So we have a full committee.
All right, well, the bill you have before you, House Bill 155, that's dealing with public construction contracts. I'll try to spare a very long-winded testimony, but I would like to give an introduction as to why this legislation is necessary here in Alaska. And then, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like, I'll walk the committee through the bill itself. As I'm sure you know, during the Great Depression, Congress enacted a federal statute, the Davis-Bacon Act, which prescribed that minimum wages, prevailing wages, must be paid to construction workers when they worked on federal public construction contracts. Subsequently, state legislatures enacted similar laws, which came to be known as Little Davis-Bacon Acts. And as I'm speaking today, I may refer to those as LDB or LDBA. Alaska's Little Davis-Bacon Act is found in Title 36, and that law applies to public construction contracts under $2,000. And Alaska's $2,000 limit was modeled after the limit of the federal Davis-Bacon Act, and that was set in 1935. So basically, as it currently stands in Title 36, if a public construction contract is over $2,000, workers must be paid at the prevailing wages for that job. A project under $2,000 would not be subject to Little Davis-Bacon requirements. And the reason that there's a threshold at all for Little Davis-Bacon projects is due to the recognition that some projects are simply too small to justify the substantial administrative burden that is associated with Little Davis-Bacon compliance. So right now, if your project is under $2,000, that project can be completed without jumping through the hoops that Little Davis-Bacon requires. And these are hoops like certified payroll, reporting requirements, filing with the Department of Labor. It's a substantial administrative burden. If you go over that $2,000 threshold, that administrative burden becomes yours to bear. And the problem here is that in Alaska, and especially in rural Alaska, it's hard to find a public construction project that is under $2,000. The federal $2,000 limit was based on a workforce that was highly mobile and on communities that are easily accessible. And I think we all know in Alaska that sometimes just is not the case. Many of our communities can only be reached by air or barge, and so that makes it difficult for any project out in rural Alaska to fit under the threshold, because by the time you factor in the costs associated with transporting materials out there and with mobilizing workforce and basically with all the logistics of doing construction in Alaska, it's pretty hard to be still under that $2,000 threshold. So even if you do have a small construction project, a project that I think we would all consider small, like filling potholes or repairing a guardrail, just by virtue of being in Alaska, it's going to be hard to fall under that threshold. And so basically what we have is our low threshold is now the functional equivalent of not having a threshold at all. Raising the threshold, as we're proposing in this legislation, can also be seen as an economic development issue because the rigidity of LDB compliance often discourages smaller firms from submitting bids. In rural areas, this often means that workers have to be imported from around the states to do a job that could have been done locally, but because of the rigidity of LDB compliance, local firms just didn't bid on it. So increasing the threshold amount will serve to open the opportunity up to smaller contractors who otherwise might not have the experience or the wherewithal to deal with LDB compliance, but now since the threshold is raised, they can enter the market for small construction contracts. Finally, I'll note again just that the threshold, that's based on a level that was set during the Great Depression, and inflationary pressures alone would justify a significant increase to that threshold, because obviously a lot has happened in the past 75 years. So combine that with the Alaska-specific factors that I just mentioned, and an increase to the $2,000 limit seems pretty reasonable. And I'll also note that a number of other states have increased their threshold as well. Alaska isn't blazing new trails here. 19 states have thresholds that are much higher than $2,000, and of these states, the average is about $108,000. You have a list in your packet that you might find helpful that goes over this in a little greater detail. So this really just brings us to the number, which is the kind of the crux of this bill, this new threshold amount that was proposed in the committee substitute in Labor and Commerce. The bill has been in the works for about 2 years, and this $25,000 trigger was the result of a collaborative effort between several unions in the state and the Alaska Municipal League. A lot of discussion on their part, and this is the amount that the affected parties have indicated that they can all live with. And I know the representative is very thankful for the hard work that they all put in coming to this agreement, because, as I said, this has been an issue that we've been trying to deal with for a while, so we appreciate their hard work. The agreement on the appropriate amount really symbolizes the representative's contention all along that this has never been an anti-union issue. It's never been about putting union versus non-union. This is an antiquated statute issue. And raising the threshold to $25,000 largely addresses that. So moving to the bill itself, you'll just see that Section 1, this is kind of the meat of the bill. This is where you'll see that $25,000 limit. And then the remaining sections, they can largely be described as just slightly more than technical. Basically, It's just trying to make everything consistent with the title and with that first section. These remaining sections, they didn't quite say public construction contracts, and so the changes that you'll see in the remaining sections are just for linguistic consistency. So that's the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I will note that we have representatives from the affected parties, I believe, here in the audience, and also representatives from the Department of Labor, I believe, for questions. And so with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Great. Thank you, Jeanette. And this bill sponsor has shown up.
Oh.
he just showed up. So, and we appreciate your testimony. A good presentation. Senator Bernard, then Senator Pascrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excellent presentation. Thank you for coming up and doing such a good job on behalf of Representative Olson.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah. I have some questions in my head here. I'm thinking if 108 is the average amount of money, I'm concerned that we didn't. I know it was a cooperation of many of the municipalities, labor, because I'm struggling with what can you get done for $25,000. I'm just a new chair for Ledge Council. We have to do a bathroom remodel, and we're talking $25,000 just for. I mean, is it even worth it when we have the threshold so low as 20, and that we're one of 13 states who will be at that, and the average is 108. I mean, I'm a little tired of doing legislation that. Doesn't make the difference it needs to make. I mean, I would be happy even with 50,000, but it just really seems, for lack of a better word, silly.
Sorry, Ms. Sennett and Jennifer. Sorry, Red. I was thinking of someone else.
Senator Menard, through the chair, the question, is it worth it? We we started out hearing during this session, hearing from municipalities throughout the state, and they came to us with a rather large number that I think probably would have topped all of the other threshold amounts that you see in your packet. It was upwards, I believe, of $300,000. And that was their best-case scenario. That's what they wanted. Representative Olson knew that such a large jump, I think everyone realizes that's a pretty huge jump, may not have the support that it needs to move forward in this building. And so that's how we arrived at the original number, which was $75,000. Subsequently, as I said, the affected parties, they came to this compromise, and although I think you will hear that no one is especially pleased with this number, we have heard, since this compromise number has come out at $25,000, we have heard from people saying this actually will help. It's not $300,000, it's not what we originally wanted, but we can get more projects done with this. And this is things like repairing guardrails, filling potholes. We heard from a lot of people in the Fairbanks area, and there are many different road service areas up in Fairbanks, and they can do projects in Fairbanks now for under $25,000, and this really will help them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bernard. And we've been joined by the Chair of House Labor and Commerce, Kurt Olson. Mr. Chair, welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Kurt Olson, House Labor.
You might as well join this committee. You're here every day.
I feel like it. I can clarify one thing. The $108,000 was skewed by one state that was at $500,000. I could make a valid argument on everything from 25,000 up to 108, but basically the municipal aid came to us with 50,000. 25,000 is what after the bill had been out a couple weeks, the municipal league and two of the union people approached me and said, what would you think if we sit down and come to an agreement on a number that we can all live with? And at that point in time, I figured the bill was stalled because they were so far apart. They asked for a week. At the end of a week, they came back and they said, we're getting close. I had no involvement with the discussions at that point in time. And as I recall, I gave them a copy of the bill and said, when you guys come to an agreement, and if you have the authority to speak on behalf of your unions and your members with respect to the Municipal League, fill in the blanks and bring it back. And basically, they on a Friday afternoon, they called and said, we're getting close. Can we go another day or so? And I said, how about Monday afternoon? And they came in the following Monday at 5, all three of them, and said, we can all live with $25,000. Nobody likes it. And I said, well, that includes me. I thought 50 was more appropriate. I think $25,000. Number one, it meets or exceeds inflation from the 2000. There seems to be consensus. I think there's less involvement with the Department of Labor. I think there, if we went above 25,000, there would be additional Department of Labor triggers. And with everybody not liking it but being able to live with it, I figured it was probably something that was acceptable to everybody and had the likelihood of passing. This is not the first time that we've attempted to address a little Davis-Bacon Act, and I would support it at the $25,000.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Questions for either Ms. Nevin or?
Just one. It's not sure. As
Olson.
Large as the number question, but on page 3, line 1, the change from shall to must, is that a different standard, or is that just what? I don't understand that.
I'll defer to Ms. Zanetta on that one.
Senator Pasquin, through the chair, after talking with the drafter, this was a linguistic change that she felt necessary, and it doesn't really change the standard.
Interesting.
Senator, you're the attorney, so do you buy that?
Well, I mean, as long as it doesn't change the standard, I don't care whether you call it apples.
Thank you, Senator Pasquin. Further questions? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, did you hear from any nonprofits that also do projects? How did they feel about the $25,000?
I think the bill will only apply to governmental subdivisions.
Does it?
No, I mean, it would be cities, boroughs, and the state of Alaska.
Okay, so this wouldn't apply to nonprofits working at, say, Eagle Crest or building a playground at a municipal park? I don't know.
Again, if it would only apply to municipal government.
So volunteers, nonprofits would not be affected?
The only volunteer situation I'm aware of like that would have been a couple of the municipalities have built playgrounds with volunteers. But again, volunteer labor is not paid for, so it wouldn't be accounted into the $25,000.
True, but a nonprofit that might be raising funds to do something, you're basically saying a nonprofit would not be affected?
No, this would only apply, and I'm sure it's broken out in the bill. Right. And I apologize. I'm wrapped around film tax credits right now, and I have been for the last few days, so I'm probably not making much sense. But, again, the antenna is for the little Davis Bacon is municipal contracts.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Further questions?
Just
Senator Baskin.
Senator or Representative Olson is accurate because I've always understood that to apply to the state and the political subdivisions created by the state, meaning the municipalities, and so I think it's well defined in here when they talk about public construction projects limiting to that as Representative Olson has indicated.
And through the chair, Fairbanks would be a perfect example. In Fairbanks right now, we're down to, I think, 108 road service areas. Some of them are as short as 100 yards, but they have the power of taxation. They assess taxes on their own. Some of them are probably several miles. That's down from about 140 a few years ago. I think a few of them have merged. But that would be a perfect example where they have small jobs that are over 2,000 and under 25. We have other parts of the state, but that is probably the most notable just on the sheer volume of size. Every time they have a subdivision in Fairbanks, or at least during the construction phases, they had new service area. And it might be four houses, might be 10. But does that help at all?
It does. Thank you.
Senator Giesel, Senator Baskin?
No further.
Further questions of the sponsor? Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you again for hearing the bill.
And don't leave.
Oh, I brought relief.
You're up again. We do have folks that are signed up to testify. Kathy Wasserman from the Alaska Municipal League. Mrs. Wasserman, if you can come forward, you know the drill.
Yes, sir. I certainly do. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. I'm one of the band of three that got together to negotiate some sort of an agreement, and I would imagine that the legislature would like to talk to all three of us how that works. It works really well. The Alaska Municipal League did start at $50,000. That was our goal. However, we could see partway into this that we were getting a lot of pushback from the unions, and it did not seem to be going anywhere. And the two union representatives that are also in the room approached me, and we discussed what we could all live with. We all walked out of the room, I think, at the end, equally unhappy. So we felt that we had probably come up with something that worked. We have all gotten a little bit of flack from some of our members, so we all think we did the right thing there as well. So it worked very well. And so we would certainly love to see, after this work and what and some of the things that we've gone through, we would love to see this bill pass. We'd hate to have to do this again. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Thank you. Questions for Ms. Wasserman? Seeing none. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Next to testify, Barbara Huff, representing Teamsters. Ms. Huff, if you can give your name and affiliation for the record, please. You understand the drill as well.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Barbara Huff-Tuckness. I'm Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. And I am also part of the band, one of the three bandits that had discussion regarding this. One thing that I would I'd actually like to add to this discussion, because it hasn't been talked about, and that's the impact on workers. And while we were very comfortable with having zero, we thought 2,000 was unheard of. So we definitely were at very opposite ends of the spectrum there. Where you're going to see, they talk about the additional construction projects or money for construction, well, where's it going to come from? Theoretically, it's coming out of the workers' pockets. And that was part of the discussion with the three of us as we went through this. We had a lot of our members that, of course, participated in the testimony as it moved through the committees. And realizing that a change was probably not unreasonable, Committee Chairman Representative Olson mentioned the inflation factor, and honestly, that's kind of sort of how we got to the 20,000. Looking at how long that's been in place, multiplying that by the inflation out there, 20,000 seemed like a good target number, something that we felt that we could live with. We will continue to monitor, if indeed this passes the legislative session and is signed by the governor, what the potential effect is going to be, because if it does anything any different with respect to the economy there. But it was a tough round of negotiations. I think, for the record, everybody said nobody particularly likes this bill, so hopefully with your support we can move it out of committee and send it up to the third floor.
Thank you, Ms. Huff. Questions? Senator Bernard.
Barbara, when was the last, I kind of lost out on that, when did we first, how long has it been since we looked at that again? Did she say 19, when it got into place at the $2,000?
That's been in place since state, I was going to say since statehood, but it's been even longer than that.
Okay. So, yeah, and then you've already brought up about the inflation, so it's not certainly unreasonable to...
For the questions. Great. Thanks, Ms. Huff. Thank you very much for your testimony. And the last to testify, Don Etheridge. Mr. Etheridge, you also know the drill.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Etheridge, representing the Alaska State AFL-CIO. And we did have a lot of negotiations over this. And the question that Senator Pascavan asked is we too were real curious about the shell and so forth. And we contacted our attorneys, and they were happy with it. And we talked to the Department of Labor, and they said it didn't change anything. So we went ahead and lived with that big change there too. So. And as has been stated, we've all taken a pretty good whipping from our own constituents along the way. In fact, Ms. Wasserman was a witness to one of mine jumping me in the hallway after we moved it out of House Labor and Commerce. One of my guys was reaming on me about it. But we think it's a fair deal, and we fully support it.
Thank you, Mr. Etheridge. We're glad to see you're still alive. Questions for Mr. Etheridge? Seeing none, we do have Gray Mitchell on the or available for questions from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. If someone would like to ask the department questions. Seeing none, it's the intent of the chair to move this out of committee today.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move this
Senator
House Bill 155 version /D from this committee to the next committee, referral individual recommendations, and attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease. Back in session, Representative Holmes.
Thank you.
You will present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Lindsay Holmes, representative from House District 26. Thank you so much for hearing this bill this evening.
And I'd like to thank the members of the committee for sticking around.
I would like to thank you for your indulgence in sticking around this evening. This bill basically just raises the penalties that can be imposed for antitrust violations in this state. That's basically price fixing and monopoly behavior. The current penalties in law are capped at $50,000 for a corporation, this would raise the penalties up to a maximum of $50 million. For antitrust violations. It also increases the penalty to a Class C felony, and these are maximum penalties. These are not set penalties. And it allows the department to collect civil penalties. Most of the time where you're going to find these is in multi-state actions, such as price fixing among drug companies or computer chip manufacturers, and a $50,000 penalty is not even a slap on the wrist for some of those. And so what happens is we go into these multi-state actions, and our Department of Law does not have the ability to impose higher fines, and it gives us very little bargaining power. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this was developed with the chair of the Labor and Commerce Committee and the Department of Law as a collaborative effort to give them some stronger penalties and a bigger hammer.
Great. Thank you, Representative Holmes. I'll object for questions. The sponsor is. Seeing none, we do have.
I do have a question.
Senator Bernard.
When is the effective date? When would this. Is there.
Senator Bernard, through the chair, there is no actual effective date in, so it would go into effect 90 days after being signed by the governor.
Great. Further questions for Representative Holmes? We do have Ed Sneffen online from the Department of Law, from the Anchorage LIO. Mr. Sneffen, would you like to provide testimony, or are you available for questions?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, Ed Sneffen with the Department of Law in Anchorage. I'm an assistant attorney general, and my primary responsibilities include enforcement of Alaska's antitrust laws. Representative Holmes introduced the bill very well and hit the high points. This would give us another enforcement tool that would allow us to recover more money for the state in some of these antitrust cases that we get involved in. And it's not just a theoretical exercise. We have been involved in multi-state cases in the recent past where if we had stronger penalty provisions, we likely would have recovered more money for the state. So this would help us in that regard. And we certainly appreciate your support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Sneffen. So I'm assuming the Department of Law has no objection to this legislation.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Great. Thank you. Senator Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many cases of antitrust violations occur in a year's period in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Bernard, in the state of Alaska, not too many companies that are actually in Alaska, but we do get involved in, it's not a dozen cases a year, but it's certainly not zero. It's, two or three cases a year, and it's mostly in connection with multi-state cases. We will join with other states to pursue, like pharmaceutical manufacturers or computer hardware manufacturers or other entities that actually sell products in Alaska. So while they're not here, they have impacts here, and that's why we get involved in them. And in the 10 years I've been in this position with the department, we have had at least a couple dozen antitrust cases where this kind of penalty provision would have applied. It might not have made a difference in all of those cases, but certainly in some of them it would have. And we are also contemplating some other cases going forward where this kind of a provision would certainly be helpful in our enforcement efforts.
Senator Bernard.
And are those, in those two or three cases, are they ever repeat offenders?
Through the chair, Senator Bernard, generally not. Most of the ones that we have dealt with have been first-time offenders. The conduct itself has been repeated, it seems, but with different defendants. And an example might be price fixing in the pharmaceutical arena, where we have seen some abuses between generic drug manufacturers and branded drug manufacturers, colluding to keep generic drugs off the market. So that pattern has been one that's been around for several years, but it's generally different defendants that we catch doing that that are the subject of our investigations. So the conduct seems to be consistent sometimes, but the players are normally different.
Further questions for Mr. Sneffen or for Representative Holmes? Senator Pascavant.
More of a comment to thank Representative Holmes for this and for Representative Olson, Chair of House Labor and Commerce. I think this is a good thing for Alaska.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Pascavant. Seeing no other of this, I will draw my objection, close public testimony. And it's the will of the committee.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move the CS for House Bill number 87, version /D, from this committee to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, again, Mr. Sneffen, thank you very much for sticking around at this late hour and providing testimony.
Yes, and thank you.
And we will take a brief at ease. In fact, I'm going to adjourn the meeting if everyone can stick around to sign the document, and it is adjourned at 5:35.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.